Science Faction is only for adults and children cool enough to leave an iTunes comment.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
And welcome to Science Faction 259, Science Faction Sinology.
Which is the study of Las Vegas, baby. We're talking Chris Angel, Carrot Top, all the best acts in Las Vegas. Yeah,
really? That's what you think of when you don't think of like gambling or like
why would anybody else
the movie
go?
Swingers.
Carrot Top.
If you're not going to go to be part of Chris Angel's pickup crew and to watch Carrot Top, why else go to Vegas?
Too bad we can't use props on the podcast.
Sinology, which is a great name, by the way. Just a sweet name for a science, because it definitely sounds like the scientist who does the most coke. But in fact, it's actually the science of studying dogs. Now, Sinology is really interesting because not only does it sound like a premium cable porn title, but it's actually one of the only sciences in the modern era in which everyday people, non-academics, non-professionals, tend to make a lot of the important discoveries. That's because, as we all know, dogs are very common in our everyday environment. Dog trainers, people who board dogs, people who have puppy breeding mills, people who just like dogs. We're surrounded by them all the time, and so you have the ability as your average layperson to make major discoveries, unlike things like, you know, particle physics. How many times do you get to hang out at CERN? Not that often, so it's harder to make those discoveries as your average person.
So your average dog breeder could say, like, I'm not some horrible dog breeder.
Right.
I'm a citizen scientist.
That's what they're doing, yes.
And you don't want to put dogs into the Hadron Collider.
That's right.
That would be really messy.
Except for the greyhounds. They're fast enough. They can make it around without getting hit. Just chase the subatomic particle.
The pace rabbit is a subatomic particle. I can see it. Here I come.
Yeah, do greyhounds usually run like 11-mile circles?
Yeah, they do. So we tend to group sinology with biology or veterinary sciences, but in other places, the study can be a separate venture. In places like China, they actually have more dedicated study of dogs themselves. Damien, hold off on the dog-eating jokes. They're offensive.
Okay, first off, I was going to make a bad driving joke. Wrong, okay. Racist. I was going to go a long way for a terrible, unrelated racist stereotype.
A lot of the study involves the difference between dogs and the wild type, which would obviously be wolves. And there are some pretty staunch differences that seem to have happened over a very quick period of time. So it's an interesting field of study, everything from the hormones involved in keeping their ears upright in wolves that go floppy in domestic dogs.
But if the Russians win, we'll have dire wolves back.
Not only will we have dire wolves back, because as we covered before, they're going to create a breeding site in Siberia for them, but also the Russians have one of the longest running biology domestication experiments of all time, in which they have domesticated the Russian fox, and they turned it into basically dogs by just breeding the nice ones over and over and over again since the 1960s. You can buy a domesticated Russian fox that is essentially a dog.
You know, Russia has such a stagnant economy because it's not diverse. You know, they're mainly an oil country. I'm saying they own a monopoly on these foxes.
Uh-huh.
First world, America could put Russia back on the map economically. We could knock down sanctions for Putin if Putin were to offer us dog foxes.
Just plenty of foxes.
Hello, American foxes. You know what? I'd love to go to Jurassic Dog Park with you today, but my dire wolf is in heat, so it wouldn't be wise.
Even more...
I know Jurassic is the wrong period.
Yes, true, very true. An even more seldomly used term, ethnosinology is an interesting study that refers to the interaction of dogs within cultural context. So you study dogs within certain native groups. What's really interesting is there are some people who postulate that dogs are actually a segment of anthropology because they're a culturally created device, just like an archaeological tool, the same way an arrowhead is, because there is no dog in nature. We created it with our culture from the wolf. And so there is this argument in certain forms of anthropology that studying dog should be part of the anthropological study because you're studying them the same way you would any other artifact.
Yeah, particularly when like Paris Hilton's carrying a dog around in a purse.
Right.
With a diamond studded collar on it.
That's... And not quite a dog, but we have some interesting things that like down here in Southern California, the natives about 7,000 years ago took the regular gray fox from the mainland here in California and took it out to the Channel Islands where they had a lot of colonies. And it became a whole different species called the Channel Island fox that only exists there, only exists because people brought them out. They miniaturize, so they all look like adorable little pups.
Aww.
And they brought him out there probably because the fox is one of the few animals that can survive completely off human feces. So they brought it out there to act like a dog slash clean up the island.
Matt Damon Mars potato poop situation.
I've seen dogs eat feces, including human feces, by the way. So you're saying,
were there some interesting situations surrounding that, or are you just...
I didn't want to buy dog food. What do you want?
Oh, my God.
Well, I'm not feeding them table scraps. I'm not a monster.
Dogs like cat poop, too. And sometimes they have delicious pea-flavored sprinkles.
Instead of an Alpo dog, it's an Aspo dog.
Oh, no.
So you're saying if a dog were to subsist primarily off human feces, it would be unhealthy for it?
I mean, I don't know. Only a fox can subsist off it and be healthy.
Okay,
If Bear Grylls can do it, your dog can do it, too.
I'm just trying to avoid an I told you so from the vet.
There's some interesting, really bizarre sinology studies that come out, again, because a lot of them come from non-experts who
aren't... When are we going to train dogs to tell if we have colon cancer?
They can tell about skin cancer, right?
So then we poop and they eat it and then they...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I think that would be the best Cologuard. You don't have to mail it in. Just poop and have your dog eat it. And then a little flag goes up on your dog's.
Oh, yeah, he sits every time. So there are some kind of BS sinology studies that come out. One of my favorites that actually came out of a major research lab. This isn't one of the ones that was done by your average person, but it was just so dumb. Was one that we actually covered a couple years back where the research group came out without any shame whatsoever and announced that dogs prefer to poo facing north.
Yeah, I saw that study.
It's total bullshit. It was a total bullshit study.
It is.
Yeah, they were just like...
It's like Mecca.
You know...
Dogs poop five times a day facing north.
At some point, there's some cancer researcher who's like diligently in the lab on the 14th hour of the day, like, I need to solve non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and he just picks up the thing and reads the dog poo study. He's just like, what am I fucking doing with my life? What's going on?
I'm in the wrong business.
Was it true north? Was it magnetic north?
Right.
Well, you got to get out your dog compass.
Well, the only problem is in the southern hemisphere, the dogs turn around the other way before they poo.
I've noticed that.
Speaking of dogs pooing, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. And with me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing great. I think this is the least hungry I've ever been.
during
an intro segment.
And, of course, our scientist host for the evening, AG. AG, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, sorry. I should... Dr. A.G.
Drag.
D-R-A-G.
She's dressed fabulous. Her hair's all done up. Her gown, by the way. I know this is not a visual medium of podcasting, but you look amazing.
What was that Hedberg joke? Don't go see Dr. Acula.
Yeah. And if you want to see Dr. Acula, you can check him out at our website, www.thesciencefaction.com, where you'll find all the articles we cover here, as well as some we don't get to. And if you want to suggest an ungoogleable question for us, you can do that at our Twitter, @factionscience. Remember, ungoogleable question, anything you can't easily look up that's subjective, science-based, and has some kind of interesting, researchable answer. But for now, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, article number one, can plants talk?
Yes. They say, feed me, Seymour.
We'll just gloss
closed.
Yeah, we'll just gloss right over your knowledge of musicals and go right into the story.
Or Rick Moranis filmology.
Indeed, there is a lot of new research in the past 10 years that seem to indicate that plants have almost like a nervous system, kind of like we do, in which one side of the plant can actually communicate with another side of the plant, which is really interesting because if you would have asked the best botanists in the world 15 years ago, they would have laughed at you and thought that that was sci-fi because they'd say, there's no nervous system. They don't have nerves. Where would that even transfer from? Well, what we found over and over again in the past few years is that it seems that some plants, not all, but some plants can activate these calcium channels.
Not all plants.
Not all plants.
Hashtag.
They can activate these calcium channels, which is basically like a flow of electricity, very similar to our own nervous system, in which a signal can be transferred from one area of the plant all the way across the plant to the far reaches of it. Now, we've known that this signal can transfer for, like I said, 5 to 10 years now in certain plants. We can actually observe it given the right conditions with the proper lighting that can see this calcium flow move through the plant. But what we didn't know is what activated it. Now, we could see something like a caterpillar munching on a leaf of a bush, and we could see that that particular munching would activate the calcium channel, but we didn't know what actually made that calcium flow begin.
Bush muncher.
hey, we accept all types of caterpillars here.
Caterpillars are very respectful lovers. That's always been known.
Everyone knows that. After you shit for your dog's food and fuck a caterpillar, you've had a that's a great day.
Right? They don't want the caterpillar kissing you after it's eaten.
The caterpillar all that dog would food. Not be the one to sing that meatloaf song. I will do a lot of things for love, but I won't do that because the caterpillar would do anything.
All right, so animators, please make us a caterpillar meatloaf mashup, and let's make this happen.
But I will.
So we wanted to know what about that caterpillar eating that leaf caused that calcium cascade. And this new article figured it out. And it's really interesting because it turns out to be glutamate. And those of you who are into biology or neurology know that glutamate is by far the most prevalent neurotransmitter in humans and other animals. So the same thing that causes our brain to work, the same neurotransmitter that we use to pass signals from in parts of our brain, are the ones that trees are using to let themselves know that they're being eaten. And you might say, well, why does it help if one leaf figures out that another leaf is being eaten? Here's what's really interesting. So the caterpillar chews on that leaf. The glutamate signals the calcium ions. Calcium channels kind of spread throughout the entire plant, warning the entire plant. And then the other leaves start producing toxic chemicals in themselves so that when the caterpillars start eating them, they taste bad. How cool is that?
Well, unless you're a caterpillar.
Yeah. I guess so.
Yeah, now they're not eating the whole plant. Now, if I'm a caterpillar, I'm only incentivized to eat one leaf and move on to the next right. plant.
So why haven't caterpillars like evolved into being omnivores?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I actually don't
Come
know
on,
much
you're
about
scientists.
I don't know much
now.
About
Tell
caterpillar biology. Maybe there are some.
Tons of aphids running around.
Well, what I think is funny is, I don't know if you've ever talked to hunters, but they'll tell you if you want to kill like a deer or something, you have to kill it outright. You only have a few seconds because otherwise the adrenaline pumps through and it ruins
and
the
it
meat.
It tastes gross, yeah.
It turns out, I guess, plants work the same way. So we're going to need to have people start sneaking up on corn stalks. They'll be dressed in all camo
well,
with
that's
a
why Americans can't do those jobs. It would just piss the plants off and everything would taste bad.
Okay, so all those cannibal movies from the like horror movies that I've seen where they're like scaring the shit out of people, that's the wrong right. way to go. They're ruining the meat.
They are ruining the meat.
They need
yes.
to be more like the mafia and like
yeah, you tell
you need to kill Joe Pesci with a smile on his face.
Right, yeah, you tell him that you're going out for calzones and then you shoot him in the back
yeah,
of the head while he's in the car.
Maybe they're into that. Like Hannibal, maybe he was into scaring people yeah. because
he
it just tastes
taste.
A little more bitter. Yeah, I think that's true. Mm. I think that's a real story in life.
Like people eat salt and vinegar chips. Some people just like...
I just meant true in the movie, but it came out like, that happened. Yes,
yeah, yeah, that was a documentary. Super
Have you seen Hannibal the documentary? It's amazing.
He's still in the loose?
Super interesting that somehow these plants are using the same neurotransmitter that we use, the one that we use the most, they use to communicate. And we didn't even discover they communicated until a few years ago, much less that they use the same neurotransmitter we did. Very, very interesting science.
Well, we're only 10% human cells anyway, right? 90% of our cells are microbial or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, but that's, I mean, we're a bag that carries around a bunch of bacteria, right? But yeah. the bag itself is still an independent living thing. What's interesting to me is just that our anatomy would be so similar, right?
Are we though? What is money?
Just an idea, man. That also brings up some interesting questions. There are some thoughts that there might be ways for plants to communicate with one another. So this is obviously with one individual plant. There are some thoughts
I've seen Avatar.
Yes, actually, there are some thoughts that there is essentially an avatar-like system by which plants can communicate with one another so that if this is the case, you know, not only would the caterpillar eating that one bush notify that bush, it might notify the three bushes next to it.
What a wonderful world we would be if we lived on a planet like Avatar, where you could just simply insert yourself into almost anything natural.
Right.
And nobody would frown upon you for it. The police wouldn't be called.
I would also like to say that the horse was not a willing participant in that. Like, he definitely brain raped that horse.
That was brain rape for sure. Consent. Now they're into like absolute consent. I need a yes from you.
Different culture. Right. So we don't know what plants this applies to. It certainly doesn't seem like it's all of them, but certain ones do. So it'll be interesting to see kind of which ones fall on that spectrum and which ones have the more developed nervous system. I'd like to know what plant has the most developed nervous system.
I want a section in Home Depot.
For plants with nervous
systems?
These
plants system? Have nervous systems.
Okay. Would it be?
And then there's...
Be kind. No loud noises.
Maybe that's what we can do with sadists, right? Like, they really want to torture people and animals. We figured that's not appropriate, so we just give them a petunia and let them pinch the leaves slowly, knowing that they're causing calcium channels to go open.
My therapist gave me this petunia.
There'll be a movement, though, to stop that.
True.
Hey, wouldn't it be a carnivorous plant, like a Venus flytrap or something? Wouldn't that be the most...
That would be interesting. Yeah, that's a good suggestion, that because they definitely have a cause-effect reaction, that maybe they have a more advanced nervous system.
PETA. Yep, that's what I was suggesting, cause and effect reaction.
PETA, but like pet pee.
Plant PETA?
Well, the people for the ethical treatment of plants.
They're like,
yeah, I guess mine would be plants for the ethical treatment of animals.
Plants for the ethical... We get a bunch of nervous system plants in a room with signs.
From now on, the next picket, everyone should just tape signs to a tree.
I was wearing my fur in the house the other day. My plant threw paint all over it. It was horrible.
Very interesting science. It will be interesting to see if maybe this changes the way at some point that we think about plants. Maybe if we find that there are some plants with highly developed nervous systems, we do think twice about eating them. Because if the difference is we don't want things to suffer, maybe we consider that suffering and we stop eating certain plants. What would be the word?
If you're already that far into it, what's left to eat? You're obviously not eating meat.
I used to...
Delicious slimes without nervous systems.
Legumes.
I used to think that way about vegans, right? Because I'd say, okay, I get vegetarian, right? You don't want to kill an animal. That makes sense to me. But like... What about honey and like milk and eggs? You're not killing
condoms.
You're not killing animals for that, right? So then like to me the vegan thing didn't make sense. Maybe there's a new thing beyond vegan where you also don't eat plants that have certain developed nervous systems. We need to think of the name for that.
Well, there are fruitarians that don't eat vegetables because when you pick vegetables you kill the plant.
Okay.
So they only eat fruit.
Something that gives freely.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, okay. Your glucose levels probably suck.
Interesting.
You're eating nature's candy. Heroin all the time.
All right, speaking of heroin, let's move on to article number 2. A sugar pill may be a highly effective treatment for certain brains. So we all know what a placebo is, right? For those of you guys who don't know, it's one of the most documented aspects of science and one of the things you always have to account for in research design. When you're trying to plan out a good research design, you always have to have some kind of placebo control because what happens is we have this thing called the placebo effect, where if you tell somebody they're getting a treatment, it tends to work for them, even if there's no actual active ingredient. We usually use sugar pills.
Even if they know it's a placebo.
Yeah, so that's where it advances even further. We've discovered in more recent tests that you can even tell the person, this is a placebo, this is a sugar pill, doesn't do anything. They take it, and they might still feel better based on the placebo effect.
I am a diabetic. This I actually do feel better.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to work for you. That would be pretty amazing. Mind over matter, though. And what's really funny is my birth control pills, they have 7 sugar pills in there.
Yes.
They're not placebo. They're just a timekeeper.
Yeah.
Most often than not, I think they should just replace those with Valium. Or something useful during those 7 days.
You know
what
would be funny, though? What if you did a study and you found out they actually were a placebo? Like, the mental aspect of putting the pill in your mouth, like, actually caused a hormone difference in your body where you're like, well, my body's so used to the hormone difference when I put this pill in my mouth that those 7 days, it does something similar to that.
Well, I never took the birth control. I just used it to smuggle Molly into class. But still, I mean, yeah, that would be really interesting. Like, the whole Republican thing. Like, well, you know, the body just doesn't let that happen when it's legitimate rape.
Right.
I forgot about that term, legitimate rape.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's because it deserved to be remembered.
What's interesting about this new study is it doesn't just look at the placebo effect. It looks at how the placebo effect works differently based on your brain physiology and psychological makeup, which I think is a really important test. I think this is the most underreported story of this week. I think it
That's
might be
really
one of the most underreported stories of the month because... When we get into this and when we get deep into it, what you're going to immediately see in your head, especially if you do think research design-wise like I do, you're immediately going to think, oh my God, this could have skewed the results for so many previous tests, and we need to start accounting for this. So this is huge. It's really big news.
So a certain percentage of people are just more susceptible to suggestion or sugar?
Yes. Yeah, well, yeah, maybe it's the sugar itself.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Like, I'd like to see a parallel study of the people who are found to have this kind of brain, how susceptible they are to, like, hypnosis.
Yes.
And suggestion.
Making America great
and
again.
Having sex with me when they really don't want to. where can I find these guys that are over 6'4"? Where are they?
This time...
Scandinavia.
Squareheads. Those are my people.
They did fMRI studies to actually look at the actual size of the brain, but they also did personality inventories to kind of look at the psychology of the individuals. And they found that people whose right side of the emotional brain was larger than the left and had a larger cortical sensory area than other people were not responsive to the placebo. Were more responsive to the placebo.
Oh, I was going to say, because I would think that more logical left brain analytic people would be less susceptible. So
The chronic pain placebo responders were also emotionally self-aware, sensitive to painful situations, and mindful of their environment. What that says to me is not only are they probably a little bit higher on the empathic scale, they probably have more mirror neurons, which we have found correlated with both of those things.
They're the first ones to yawn back.
Yeah, actually they would be. They would absolutely. That might be a good test to see if somebody is more susceptible to placebo. Who yawns quickest in a room when somebody starts yawning?
Yeah, empaths.
Yeah, because those mirror neurons might be part of the equation. They might be, again, that act of taking it or of seeing other people get really...
There's a million follow-up studies you could do on this.
Yes!
Okay, fund us. Somebody fund us, and we'll conduct these studies. I have a doctorate. We can make it happen. I can do it ethically. And,
I'm certified for human research trials. We can do it.
Sweet. All right. So then, and then we'll bring plants into it.
Mm-hmm.
Susceptible plants.
Which, I mean, just as somebody likes to insert himself into things, which are the most susceptible plants?
The ones that are part of PETA, plant PETA.
Okay, gotcha.
We're going to get the plants with the central nervous system that do the calcium trick, and then we're going to give them placebos and then ask them how they feel about it later.
The plants...
And somebody's going to eat them.
Empathic plants for the ethical treatment of animals. PETA.
Then some lucky caterpillar gets to eat them.
We're going to make a big study. It's going to be great.
It would be a huge confounding factor to essentially every study we've done that have a placebo confounding ability. It would be something we need to go back and not only think about the effects of other studies, the accuracy of other studies, but what we do in the future and whether or not we should segregate these people into different groups.
Right, like categorize them. Like maybe we find a range and we go, you're a one, you're a two, you're a three. You're the most susceptible, you're the least susceptible. Yep. And here's how ones respond to the study, or twos respond to the study, et cetera. And then you'd be able to see... And knowing what you are, you can be like, plug yourself into whatever the result is.
I'm just worried about all the human rights violations, due to your segregated groups from tight control books.
No, you're not.
You're not allowed to drink from this water fountain, boy. This is for people who are highly susceptible to placebos.
It also, you know what, though? When we say like, oh, hey, would those people be the ones that are susceptible to hypnotism and stuff? And we kind of look down on that. Hey, I would love to be susceptible to placebo more. I would love it for somebody to be like, hey, you know your chronic back pain? Here you go. Here's a sugar pill. Just take this every day. By the way, I'm telling you this is a sugar pill. Here you go.
I could become the perfect human.
Yeah, it would be fantastic.
If I were that susceptible.
Very, very cool.
You could look, flowers for Algernon yourself.
I could. Look, are the flowers... Do they have nervous systems?
I can't support this. I'm too woke.
I'm woke AF. No flowers for Algernon. Peace out.
Look for this study to really make some major waves in scientific news, especially in people surrounding research design, biomedical stuff, and any kind of medical type studies. This is
experimentation
huge deal. And it's really, really big. And I think a lot of people who are doing experimental design, if you have any friend who does it, let them know about this study. Everybody who works in experimental design should know about this. All right. Thank you, AG, for coming back for Science Faction 259, where you learned about synology, how plants can talk, and the effectiveness of placebos varying based on your brain and personality traits. Thank you so much for joining us, and everybody come on back this Thursday for Science Faction 260.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.